Welcome back to the Textual Talk. In today's episode, she quit the classroom in order to work in tech. We dive deep into a fascinating conversation with Jessica Davis, founder of Resume Badge and a career strategist extraordinaire. We explore everything from YouTube engagement and the power of AI in interviews to the importance of thorough preparation and personalized approaches in the hiring process. Jessica shares her inspiring journey from education to tech and finance and her diverse experiences working across different industries. We also discuss the evolving job market, diversity challenges, the significance of networking, and the pros and cons of customer success roles. Along the way, we touch on the trends in social media interactions, the value of maintaining a professional online presence, and much more. Whether you're navigating your career or just curious about the backstage of job hunting, this episode is packed with insights and real-life experiences. So, let's jump right in. Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and this is another episode of your favorite show. If you listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you know what to do. Leave a podcast review, help us out in the podcast analytics, and if you're watching this right now on YouTube, subscribe, hit that bell icon to be notified when we're dropping our content. And also, join the Patreon, really support the channel. It helps us do episodes like this where we're in person, where we're vibing. So if y'all want these to continue, subscribe to the Patreon. Every bit helps. But today, we have, by namesake, we got my cousin on the show. And this is an episode that's been in the works for a while, and we're finally here.
We are.
It's October. The weather is great. Miss Jessica Davis, could you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah. I didn't prepare an intro, but hey, y'all. I'm Jess Davis. I am a career strategist. You've probably seen me floating around the internet. I have a career company called Resume Badge, and I just help people with jobs, resumes, LinkedIn. I help people secure their next opportunity. I'm a mom. I am someone that just likes to really just try new things, explore the world. I love traveling. Also, just really meeting people along the way and seeing how we could build together. So really happy to be here today with you and the pod.
Perfect. So, and I told everybody, I know this is another episode where I did not put any questions down.
It's all good.
But we're going to get from A and we're going to go to B. Now, we heard your intro. Well, let's get a little bit more in depth. Who's really behind Resume Badge?
Oh, okay.
So, like, we can talk about, we don't have to talk about high school. We can talk about, I guess, college, what you majored in, where you're from.
Yeah.
All that stuff, how it ties into who you are. Because I'm guaranteeing it's somebody out there that sees themselves in you. So.
Well, I love that. So diving a little deeper, I'm from Boston. That's where I grew up. If you're familiar with the Boston area, I grew up in Mattapan. So not really the best neighborhood.
Is that what, no, that's not where New Edition from, is it?
They from Roxbury, okay. Which is like 5 minutes up the road. Still like the inner city Boston bubble. So a lot of people say they're from Boston, but they really be from like Waltham or, you know, Amherst or something. What Boston people consider Boston would be Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, Hyde Park, South Boston, East Boston, and that's about it. Everything else, you're not from Boston.
Sound like Dallas.
Yeah. What's that song? Not Atlanta, not Boston, you know? So we got to keep it within the bubble. And I did go to Boston Public Schools. K through 12. I've been really a product of public education most of my life, my whole life, really. I went to Boston Public Schools, went to Boston Line Academy, so shout out anybody that went there. Went to UMass for undergrad. I majored in legal studies because I wanted to be a lawyer. my parents always told me that you argue so much, you might as well go to law school. So
shout out to Dolph.
Yeah, she liked to argue, right? I mean, I don't like to argue, but I do like to drive my point home. You know?
Like to argue. We are the same sun. Now, I don't know what your moon sign is, but we are the same sun.
Right, you right.
You be going hard on Twitter.
I am a Aries sun. I believe I'm a Gemini moon.
I'm a Pisces moon.
Okay. And I'm a Aries rising.
I forgot what my rising is. I got to go back and check it out.
So, yeah, I majored in legal studies. And then somewhere along the road, I ended up becoming a teacher. So right after after undergrad, I went into Teach for America. So I did that. And I taught for a couple years in public schools in Atlanta, in Illinois, and in Boston. By the time I got to Boston, right before the pandemic hit, it was a little before the pandemic. I moved to Boston, back to Boston in 2016 from Atlanta. And it was a mess, okay? Like, public education is crying out for help. So God bless these kids. George Bush, you will pay for your crimes. And we will continue to push on. But I had to take a step away from the classroom because for my sanity, what I saw, you know, it's not too many people that's really trying to help these kids. And if you're really in it for the right reason, like trying to help kids grow and be better, then you're going to get very frustrated. So I stepped away for a while. Not sure if I'll ever go back into the classroom. Probably not. I did work for a state board of education for a while. And then I went to grad school in Illinois. I went to University of Illinois for my MBA. And that was a different experience because it's in the middle of nowhere. And I didn't know that. I went there because they gave me money to go, you know. I don't like to pay for nothing, especially not my education. So I'm the person that'll, like, scoop up every scholarship, every grant I could get my hands on. So a majority of that I got covered through grants and scholarships. I did have a little bit, you know, that is on the back burner that I got to take care of.
Don't we all.
I got to take care of that. But I would say I did get my master's in education, too, while I was in Atlanta, that I'm not using anymore. So, yeah. And here I am. Now I'm in Dallas. I moved here 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, to work for a company. And now I work for a different company in a whole different industry.
Like, hey, if y'all want to know the company she worked for, join a Patreon.
Yeah.
I give them names on the Patreon. I'm surprised you didn't want to stay in Atlanta.
I loved Atlanta for what it was while I was there. I had a whole life there, you know, a career. I had bought a house out there. I had a group of friends that I loved. And the reason I moved back to Boston was because I wanted my parents to come live with me in Atlanta so they can help me take care of my baby. Like, hello. And they didn't want to. So it was just me and my ex-husband and the baby. And we needed help.
That's not what I'm laughing at.
We needed help. So I went back to Boston, sold my house, lived there for a little bit. I was miserable when I went back there. And that's when I realized I'm going to go and live somewhere where I actually want to be. So now I'm in Dallas.
Got you. Yeah, I started laughing because you didn't say the baby. You said the baby. And so my mind thought about, that's not your baby.
That's my baby. Yeah, the baby is now 8. That's my baby.
Yeah, look at you. So, boy mom.
Yeah.
So, now, go through education. I guess what, I think I'm going to tie that question in later. Mm-hmm. So, when you moved back here, you were no longer in education, right?
No, I moved here and started working for an IT consulting company. And I was doing kind of like a hybrid roles, like part customer success, part consulting. You've probably heard the company before. I'm not going to drop their names, but they're around. And I worked there for about 2 years or so. And then I got laid off. Okay. So
talk about that.
I was out of work for like 6 months. Okay. Like the job market, I know you all have been hearing about how crazy it is and all that. Now I went through it. And I'm just glad to be on the other side because I wasn't going to be able to keep that up. Just doing all those applications, all those interviews, it wears you down.
It does.
I was worn down.
It does. So let's go back and actually talk about how did you transition into a technical role or into the tech space from education? Let me get back in the mic. That's better.
Okay. So I think I kind of just like fell into it, honestly, excuse me, because I had no experience whatsoever, but I did start like, you know, taking little like courses here and there, certificates here and there. And then also I was in grad school. So I really started leaning into like the career services office at my school, like really started going hard with networking. I think that's what really did it for me. I really started just reaching out to people at companies that I wanted to work at. I made a list of places that I could see myself working at. And then I ended up getting a senior manager role as my first role in the tech industry, with a very large tech company. And that was kind of my foot in, and I haven't really looked back since, because just transitioning into that industry has just been able to kind of help me grow mentally, just really look at the world from different perspectives. Because now I'm curious about everything. I want to know how everything works, you know. I want to know how we are securing everything that's working, you know. So ever since I got to grad school, because the school I went to in Illinois was also a big engineering school. So it's like the number two engineering program in the country. And I saw all of those people kind of combining their technical skills that they were learning with their business skills that they were learning. And I wanted to see what was kind of going on with that, because I initially went to business school because I wanted to get into education operations. I still wanted to kind of stay in education, just not be in the classroom. But when I saw like all these different things that you could learn, I ended up concentrating in information systems. And that kind of helped me to sell myself as well and just be more marketable as someone that did not have like a background within the industry. And again, like I said, networking, just really getting in people's DMs on LinkedIn, sending my resume out to whoever was looking, or whoever said that they had an opportunity. I was sending my stuff out to them and just really asking around, like, how do you, having those, like, what do you call those one-on-ones when you talk to people? Just asking people that I knew that was in the industry, like, what is it like for you? What brought you here? You know, what's your driving force? What are you learning? And just really picking people's brains to see if it was something that I wanted to do.
So like them coffee chats.
Yes, exactly.
So with that being said, well, first of all, shout out to you for doing management information systems. I got my bachelor's in computer information systems. And then my master's is in technology management.
Okay.
From actually University of Dallas in Irvine. So
cousins.
I guess what transferable skills do you think you took over from education that helped you land one of those tech jobs? Because I know we do always talk about the transferable skills and everything else. But I do like to bring people on here that didn't just start out in a super technical role, that started in something vastly different from what people expect them to do, and now they're doing something different. Because, like I said, we do have these consultations with people that are teachers or executive assistants or whatever they're doing. And it's like, well, how can I do a role like this?
Yeah. I think being able to sell yourself in the interview is so important. So before I started going on these interviews, like, and I had some big interviews before I landed my first role, I had an interview with Microsoft and Amazon in the same week. So they, I had got flued out. So I was like bouncing from campus to campus. It was crazy.
Look at you.
I was like,
you should have vlogged it.
Y'all want me? You know? So they have like a wall over there at Microsoft. When you do your interview, you can sign your name. So my name's up there. You probably see it. But transferable skills coming from education. I was a special ed teacher for a while, for like the last couple years in the classroom. And so part of that was I had to do a lot of data collection and do a lot of reports and kind of just analyzing that information. So I got really good with like using like Power BI and Tableau because those were kind of the platforms that we were using to run our reports for our meetings and stuff. So as soon as I saw like those were starting to be some of the requirements or some of the tools that some of these companies were looking for, I slapped that on my resume. I would say probably like the collaboration pieces. I was a team lead. I was a assistant director of special education for a little bit. So being able to manage groups of people in different environments and then being able to show the results of that as well, I think were kind of two things that really kind of made people interested in me, because there at the time there weren't a lot of teachers that were like looking to kind of pivot into that tech space. So I was it piqued people's curiosity, like, what is this teacher lady doing here? So, you know, being able to have those skills but also being able to sell it in a way where it makes sense for their company, or, you know, they could see how they could use those skill sets within the role that they're looking for. I think that's what helped kind of creep me on in there.
Okay, cool. And what I'm also going to say right here is, people, this is an example of diversity. And I'm not talking about because she's a black woman. I'm talking about because she comes from a different background and now she brings a different perspective into the workplace. See, a lot of times people are so fixated on how people look and stuff like that. They're talking about diversity. I'm like, that's not the only part of it. Like, there's a reason why really diverse teams tend to perform better than you hiring the same type of a prototype or whatever the type is. I forgot what type of the word is used for type. But hiring that same type of person over and over and over again. It might be cool. Y'all may get along, but don't nothing change, doesn't work better. Versus then getting different people. And so you said your first role was a senior manager.
Yeah.
Doing what?
Excuse me. I was a senior manager at Amazon for like right before the pandemic hit. And I was kind of driving a global program that they had. It was like an internal program. And those same tools that I was using in the classroom, like Power BI, Tableau, SQL, like I was using those same tools in that role. So I kind of feel like if you have an opportunity, if you're coming from a different background to play around with different technologies, if you have like an instructional technology leader or something, see what it is that they're working on, see what tools that they're using, because you never know like when it's going to come in handy. So they didn't really care about my background being in a completely different industry. What was interesting to them was how I was able to leverage the data that I was collecting to kind of make decisions from that, and that directly correlated to the work that I was doing within that company, and kind of being able to utilize those skills to help that program grow. And that program is still here today, thriving. So I used the same skills that I had in the classroom when I was trying to figure out like what behavioral or academic steps to take for my students. I use those same tools to be able to make decisions for that company and decide, okay, if we move this person to this country, what are going to be the results based on X, Y, and Z factor, and be able to visualize that and communicate it to, you know, our senior leaders so they know that the decisions that were being made are data-driven. So finding results that make sense and that you can transfer to other industries is super, super important.
Okay. And before we move to the next question, are there any free resources where people can learn how to use Power BI and Tableau?
My favorite tool, well, Tableau has like a Tableau Public where you can kind of play around with some of their data sets and like do little independent projects on your own. And then my favorite tool that I was using for like learning SQL and things like that, I like W3 Schools, and that's free. You could just go and do some live practice, play around. They give you some problems. And of course, YouTube University. always a go-to for me.
Perfect. So when you left that role, is that when you got into customer success?
What did I do after that role? Yes. Yeah, it is. So okay. After, well, actually, no. I had a little brief stint where I worked for a politician out in Austin. So I did that for a little while and was there.
Doing what? You're like a campaign manager?
Not necessarily. I was doing more like outreach. And I was a program manager there. So I was doing like outreach and managing some of their like DEI programs and some of their women's initiatives and things like that. So part of it was like campaign management, but not really. It was more so like managing different programs that they had. And he did win. So, and then after that, I got into customer success. And I started doing customer success for that state education board that I was working for. And then after that, when I realized I hated Massachusetts, I didn't want to live in Boston anymore. What happened was I got into a real bad car accident. I was driving my son to school and this lady T-boned me. It was a blizzard. And we ended up hitting three cars, flying to the other side of the road and almost hitting a house. So after that, I was like, I'm getting out of here. And that was like in February of that year. By June, I was out. I was finished.
Did you at least get paid?
No, because she wasn't insured. So
they don't make you. So like, I know out here they make you have. What is it called when a person don't have non-insured motors or something? Uninsured motors. Mm-hmm. Did they make y'all have that in Boston?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dang.
Yep. So that was that. And then I came out here, did my little customer success consulting thing for a little bit. That was cute. But then I realized that I don't really know if I want to talk to people every single day.
I was going to ask you about, I guess, explaining what is customer success, mm-hmm. and maybe who is it for, since you're kind of going into that.
Yeah. So I worked at Enterprise. I was an Enterprise customer success manager, and we had a series of like different platforms and different services. And I was basically responsible for the different companies that had subscribed to our services, that were using our platforms, and just managing their experience. A lot of it was like doing, demos. A lot of it was like going into the back end of their products to see if they needed any updates to their features that they're subscribed to, or just being able to show them how to use it and then doing like status checks. So I had about 100 clients, and between those 100 clients were anywhere from 2 to 10 accounts. So I was busy all the time, on the phone all the time, emailing all the time. And it was exhausting. Like, I started getting the hang. I mean, I did get the hang of it. You know, I was like automating my emails, schedule sending, so I could free up some more time on the back end. But I will say it was extremely hands-on. So if you're not like a people person, you're not someone that loves to yap a lot, like I wouldn't do it. But if you are someone that's like very enthusiastic about showing people things and talking about new products, I think that's where my teacher side came in handy too, because like I was doing a lot of teaching, like, this is how you do this.
Oh, so technically you could have pivoted into sales.
Yeah, I'm not a salesperson. I get annoyed. I don't like to feel like I'm begging. I did sales for a little bit. I did do tech sales for a cybersecurity company. I forgot about that part.
Okay,
I've done a little bit of everything. Okay, I go where the bag is. So I did sales for a cybersecurity company for a little bit, and that was cool, but I didn't want to be on the selling side, so that's when I pivoted into the customer success. So that was, like, before the customer success role. And, you know, customer success, you're not really selling, but you kind of are, because you're selling them on keeping the product. So if you're great at sales and you don't want to have to constantly rely on somebody signing the dotted line, but you want to keep those relationships going, customer success is a good pivot for you.
Yeah, because customer success is always one of those roles where people make it seem like it's so easy to get into. And, oh, if you want to get in tech, customer success role right here. Come do customer success.
It's so hard. It's hard. And they do expect you to have, like, a background that makes sense. So, like, sales is a logical background because a lot of times sales and customer success do work hand in hand together. Mm-hmm. So I worked a lot very closely with account executives, with sales managers. It is kind of salesy because you're helping them to drive the sale home. You're helping them to get those renewals, but it is also not your responsibility. Your responsibility is more so the engagement, the experience, and then like those renewals at the end.
Perfect. Now, so in the customers, is this your first customer success role where you were here and the one that laid you off?
That was my second.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's talk about the second customer success role, I guess what was different, and two, we'll talk about the layoff. Like, I never got in depth with you on asking you like that question. I figured I'd save it for
this. Oh, you messy. Okay, so I guess the difference between the two, one of them I was doing it for like a public education institution, I guess you could say. So my customer base there was completely different. You know, it was like principals and school districts and school leaders and things like that. Sometimes teachers. So that was like my core customer base over there. Whereas when I was in the rollout here, my clients were other companies. My customers were other companies. So like in various industries. So anywhere from like manufacturing to high-end retail to tech companies, security companies, anybody that had access to our service and that had a subscription was my customer. So it was a very different experience because on the enterprise level, when you're working with other companies and other organizations are your customers, that is there's a lot more on the line, I would say, because they are investing, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars into your product and they expect results. So like you really have to be invested in that relationship with those clients, invested in them being able to drive value out of whatever the product is, or they're not going to renew and you're going to have a problem.
Yeah. So let's talk about that layoff.
Yeah.
Like, well, granted, you were remote at this time, right?
I was.
Yeah, so I know for me, I've talked about it plenty of times. The night I got laid off in 2018 is I walked in. I don't even know if I was running late that day, but I'm walking into the office, and my coworker, I see him with a box of his things, walking to his car.
Oh.
And he kind of whispered, like, words, mouths to me, good luck.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And I'm like, you know, from right there kind of set the tone of like what's going on. Then the director's in there and he gets me and I go in there with HR and we talk.
Yeah.
And see, I kind of like not knowing what's going on. I didn't really have anybody I could actually directly. That's the time. That's why I tell people now early on in your career, build up your network.
Yeah.
So you have somebody to talk to. At that time, I didn't really have people I could just reach out to like, hey, before I sign this, what should I try to negotiate?
Yeah.
Because, like, when I had all this info, there was, like, his name was Bill. He's like, you know, it's all right or whatever. It's good. And if I go back in time, like, nah, I'm black. I need about, like, 3 to 4 months of pay. With my bonus paid out 100%. That's what I need. Not 6 weeks. I forgot what they gave me. I think they gave me, like, 6 weeks and then my bonus paid out at 100%. Mm. And I was like, I need more. Luckily, I was in grad school at the time, so that kind of flowed to me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize I could have started getting unemployment then too. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if I'd been smarter, I would have started doing like Uber Eats or something.
Yeah, something.
But that's kind of like how my layoff went. Now I know for you guys it's different. I know like sometimes you hear a little bit of rumblings about, you know, you looking at the performances of the company and like,
okay. Yeah.
But you know it happening, but who is it happening for? And then I've seen times where somebody just got a promotion that got laid off.
Yeah. Like, I had gotten promoted not too long before. Not yeah, too man, long you before. Be like,
bro, I'm doing what I'm
a couple months before. I had literally just got promoted, moved to a new team. That should have been a red flag, though, because why are you moving me to a new team? So, you know.
They thought you'd do well. But, yeah, what was that experience like that day? Did they just put you on the Zoom meeting and say?
Yeah. It was a Teams call, I believe. But, yeah, same thing. Just got on a call, and, you know, they ran their little script. First, it was just me and the HR lady. And then, like, I think, like, the last 2 minutes, my manager came in. And then she popped out. And I'm like, I have questions. Like, there was just no room to ask questions. They were not trying to hear any type of negotiations. It was just, this is what it is. Thank you for your services. And that's when I was like, you guys are so cold. Like, this is so mean. But I had kind of had a feeling, you know, that things were going to get shaken up a little bit anyway. So I had been preparing for it for a couple months. I had been aggressively saving, aggressively investing. So I didn't know how long I was going to be out of work for. I didn't know that the job market was where it was at the time. You know, this happened back in January. So thankfully I had, you know, been watching the job market for a little bit, started really seeing some of those trends and realized that we're not in 2022 anymore. We're not in 2021 anymore. And things were starting to get a little tight. So once I started to realize that, I really just started doing my little outreach, sending out my resume here and there. Saving my little coins for when they call my number, and they did.
Yeah, so funny enough that you said that. I just put out my podcast episode we shot last week, and we were reading an article from Business Insider. It was a millennial that was working in tech. He was a data scientist, and he was talking about how he felt being Black and AI was leading to him not have a job. And one of the excerpts of the interview was he talked about, matter of fact, what would be better is if I play it.
Mm. It was a video?
It wasn't a video, but I had, when I talked about it, I clipped it up.
Okay.
For the channel. I think it's this one right here.
The biggest part I want to touch on. He said, in 2020, everybody wanted to hire me because I was Black. Mm. He said, pointing to diverse hiring initiatives rolled out in the corporate world following the murder of George Floyd. I wonder if other people of color hired during the 2020 hiring spree were also laid off in the last year or so, too. I want to bring this up because I've talked about over the years that the hiring that took place in late 2020, 2021, and a little bit in 2022 does not exist anymore because companies were making a lot of money, and they were hiring a lot of people to just be hired, and they weren't doing work, especially at some of the big tech companies. You have people from Meta saying, hey, they only hired us because they want the competitors to get us, but they weren't doing work. And this is the biggest part I want to touch on. He said it.
That part, and honestly, I think outside of AI thing, I think AI is just fun to talk about.
That's going to take some time.
But I do think, I've talked about this plenty of times, that the lack, you just went through a lot of interview processes. Mm-hmm. Can you count, I bet you can count on your hand, how many either brothers or sisters you had on the interview panel or just you interview with in general, can't you?
One. In the entire 6 months that I was looking for a job. Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's why I do sympathize with people, especially because I get a lot of my clients are like Black.
Yeah.
So I do sympathize with people like when they're feeling like their just number isn't getting called, because it's tough to sometimes feel like you're getting a fair chance when you're like, you mean tell me y'all don't pay attention that much that y'all can't read the room and have like one person on here that helps me? Because everybody it's not a very confident person. Everybody doesn't have enough cachet. They didn't did enough interviews that they can do whatever. You have some people who don't know how to read the room, who don't know how to. I've seen people who are very adequate at possibly doing a job, but they just have a lot of anxiety when it comes to interviewing, and the interviewer does not know how to. Let's get them kind of to be relaxed. Instead, they just go into drilling them. Mm-hmm. And so you couple with that, you may not have anybody fighting on your behalf.
Mm-hmm, correct.
And so you're like, bro, when is my number going to be called? Like, what am I doing wrong? Like you said, I record a lot of interviews, so I know which ones I know which ones is good. I know it's like, okay, dang that. I know if I'm getting in there and somebody's nitpicking my resume, I'm like, oh, this thing on that bullshit. I'm like, bro, why are you nitpicking these numbers, bro?
For me, it was always like a lot of I get to the last round and then that's I feel like that's where the who's gonna advocate for you comes in, because if that person has to decide between you and like 10 other people, you know, subconsciously they might pick the person that they more closely identify with.
Exactly.
And I think that's where that becomes a problem.
Yeah. The funny thing is, so I've seen that happen a lot to roles, and then that same role you interviewed for will be back open.
That happened to me. Let me tell you, in February, because remember I got laid off in January and I started interviewing right away. I had a verbal offer in February, and then they were also excited, and it was actually a European company. I don't know if you noticed, a lot of European companies are coming out here and setting up shop in Dallas. But it was a European company, and I was really excited because it was going to be something kind of different. And they gave me the verbal offer, and as soon as I reached out to them about negotiating, the offer that they presented me with, because they hadn't even given me the offer letter yet, and it came randomly on a weekend. So I wanted to just reach out and see if I could get some time on the hiring manager or the recruiter's calendar to see if we could negotiate some of the terms of the offer. And then they stopped answering my calls. They stopped answering my emails. They stopped answering. They were even text message friendly with me. They was texting me like, we're so excited to have you. Can't wait to have you on board. And the week after, I see the role, the same exact role, back online. And I'm like, you guys are crazy. So, yeah, that has been a thing. And I think with right now being an employer's market, like they're taking advantage of that. Like they'll say, yeah, you got the job. But as soon as you want to negotiate, as soon as you want what you're worth, they're going to go and try to find somebody else. So that does happen. And it can get very disheartening when you are so close. You're like right there. And there's no one advocating for that little extra push for you that could, you know, really make a difference.
Right. And I feel like if you make it to the final round, you deserve some type of feedback. Mm-hmm. I think people, we are scheduling our lives around these interviews, and you're just kind of just saying, well, that's all the feedback they said or whatever. And, you know, there's no way to clarify anything. I'm like, okay, I can see that. But that's it. You know, I wasted my time sometimes interviewing with you.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. And then a lot of companies, like you said, they come from the EU over here.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not used to a lot of people negotiating. Or they feel like you're a woman. You should just take what we possibly
get. Take whatever
you get. Take that.
I've never been a take whatever you get person.
Neither.
Ever.
That's people are like, so a video I did almost 2 years ago about I quit one of my, I didn't really quit my job. I just went and got a new one. But I tell it I quit because I knew people would watch it. It's been blowing up recently again.
Okay.
And people comment all type of stuff on there. Like one person told me I sounded lazy because I was talking about going into the office. But I was like, they don't understand context or nuance. Yeah. It wasn't the fact I had to go in the office. I was mad because I had to go in the office and I was the only person on my team in the office. Everybody else was in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why am I going into office if I'm not working with nobody in the office?
Right.
And so that's what I was on. Like, yeah. People were stupid. I was like, and I'm going into office a lot of days to do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Just wasting like, gas.
I can literally badge in and then go back home at 9 or 10 if I want to.
Yeah, and then they try to say it's this whole like, oh, fostering collaboration. And I get that. I totally understand. But if no one is there in your office to collaborate with,
exactly.
You're meeting with them online on Teams or Zoom or whatever anyway, then what is the reason?
Right. It exactly. Like who I mean, I get it, these people over here, but these people are busy. I don't know what they're working on. They don't know me. Like,
or they're just not on your team.
So that's the whole thing. Like people don't mind. Like, hey, I go once a week or something if you want me to. But like, to just force you to go in just to go because y'all want to watch people badge, it's cool. Like, it's a lot of stuff. Or they'll tell me about the money. Oh, for the money, I would have did this. Mm-hmm. But it's like, oh well, working at a warehouse. Well, unfortunately for you, I have skills that don't allow me to work at a warehouse. Mm-hmm. So that's not my, you know, reality. If I had all those skills, I would just suck it up because I can't get nothing better yet because I don't have no skills. Right. So it's like all those different things, and people just are showing their insecurities through them. Like somebody, I don't know, if you go through my story, this person, I don't know what they're talking about. It was like soup kitchen opens at 4 a.m. I didn't know what that means.
To you?
Yeah.
So, oh, when you had put the, you quit your job?
Yeah, this is a recent comment.
Crazy.
So I replied back. I said,
"That's wild."
It was a girl. It's like, I don't know if there's a man or a woman, but the picture was a woman, and I was like, "Your legs open at 3."
So, oh, child.
That's my. I'll be like, that's the funny thing. I think people be coming on my YouTube comments thinking I ain't gonna comment.
Yeah, no, we
coming back on everything.
We gonna fire back around here.
Shoot, I like that engagement. Plus, yeah. I help YouTube push more people to come to the video.
Keep coming, keep it pushing.
So, let's actually talk about a little bit about interviews. I think this is also like a good topic. Because I've been introducing different strategies to my clients with showing them like, hey, I record my interviews. I transcribe them. Mm-hmm. I get like my AI has gotten so good now and they constantly updating their AI. Now it knows how to pull every question out based on prompts I made of what I asked, what the interviewers asked. And so that's perfect to go back and see questions I didn't do good on. I can go work on those. It's making your own study guide. And I found a TikTok the other day, and it actually gave a good example of your elevator pitch in the beginning when you're saying, tell me about yourself, of like, just try to describe yourself in adjectives versus kind of like doing a chronological thing in your thing. Yeah. I was like, you know what? That make a lot of sense. But how do you feel about, because I also know it takes, like, for me, interviewing is like working out. Like, you got to do 4 or 5.
It is.
Before you really start feeling like yourself again, because mm-hmm. there's so much stuff you forget. The questions you've been asked, you might not have been asked in a while, or you're just presence and talking concisely, and so they can understand how you problem solve and this and that, and all your different list of things that your achievements and stuff that you can draw from. And they say, well, tell me about a time or this. Like, how do you feel that was going for you? Like, when you finally felt like you was, okay, I'm back in that mode, so I'm going to knock out any interview that comes my way.
Yeah. I've always been really good at interviews. I've always been, like, able to knock them out the park. But I think part of that is because I do a lot of preparation on the back end before I even get to that. If I know that there is a company that wants to interview me or wants to consider me for a position, I'm learning everything that I need to know about them, about the role, and then I'm like consolidating it into a document or something that I could go back and review. And I like to keep my interview responses very brief and to the point. I think that that is what has helped me to be successful in these interviews, because a lot of times when you are not comfortable in a situation, interviews are never comfortable. Like, I know a lot of hiring managers will try to, you know, break the ice, but at the end of the day, like, your future is in their hands. There's nothing comfortable about that. So being able to come to the table already kind of having prepared yourself mentally for what you're going to say, knowing a little bit about the role, knowing a little bit about the organization, and really consolidating your answers to where you're not rambling, you're not just like saying random stuff, is really what I always do for myself and for the people that I have as clients as well. Like, I will equip them with a guide, like, this is what your interview might look like, you know, doing a little bit of research too on like what the company interview process looks like. You can find that information online, you know, like
process.
Go on Indeed and see what is a typical interview like, what are some of the questions they're asking. And then you also go back and looking at that job description and working backwards from there and seeing how you can incorporate bits and pieces of that job description into your interview responses, I think is super important, because at the end of the day, they're looking for specific things within that JD. So you want to make sure that you can articulate how you're a good fit for that, because they're going to be listening out for those keywords. They're going to be listening out for those experiences. So if you can find ways to sprinkle that into your resume, sprinkle that into your interview responses, and doing a little creeper on the people you're interviewing with also, like, go on their LinkedIn, you know, see if they have any side projects or websites they're working on, and seeing how you can kind of incorporate that and break the ice with them as well, make them comfortable.
Yeah.
Even if they're not trying to make you comfortable, which most likely they will be, but, you know, make them feel like you know them.
I wonder if it would be fun to start an interview off with a dad joke and see how that go.
If I was a hiring manager, I would like that. But
I mean, like I said, I've had interviewers start off our interviews with icebreakers I've used from this podcast. Yeah. So,
oh wow, yeah, and you know that's the thing too. Like,
and that was Microsoft that did that.
Ooh, see, they be watching. I've had interviews before where people will be like, "Oh, I've seen your content," like, and I was like, "You seen my what?" You know. So now I'm a little more like reserved.
Speaking of that, that's actually, I'm glad you said that. That's helped before. So, like, if I'm a leadership type of role or whatever, or people are asking me, hey, what's your experience of mentoring and doing this and that? It's like, well, I'll actually start bringing that stuff I do outside of where I said, well, I've been consulting, like, clients for, like, 3-4 years now, and I've helped them get into various blue team roles. I have this LinkedIn learning course. Here's the link to that. Hey, here's the link of me talking, like, to some college kids about security operations so you can get an understanding of I know how to explain that's things awesome. And talk. And so I share those because they help out. A lot of times when I share those, they get back immediately and say, okay, hey, we want to talk to you.
And that's the thing too. Like, you want to, in this current economy, in this climate, especially in the job market, you really want to try to make yourself a little bit visible. And I know people hate LinkedIn, but I love LinkedIn.
I do too.
I love LinkedIn. Okay. Because they have so many different features where you can like literally make yourself stand out as a candidate. You could be a regular person and be a thought leader on LinkedIn and be able to just speak on what you know.
That's me. I've gotten people who I barely talk to, but know of this content from the show or post I've made to where they're just like, yeah, we know who you are.
Yeah.
We definitely need you on the team. Let me tell them about you so at least they can interview you.
Exactly.
I've had that happen. So that's why I'm always telling clients, like, hey, you don't have to be an influencer, but people should know when they go on your page what role you're trying to transition to and what you care about. And if you start just putting that work in little by little, it's going to work. Because the biggest thing, like you were talking about earlier, like with the data and the stuff you're doing at Power BI, you know how to explain those things you're doing. Some of these people aren't using the tools at work yet. They're just labbing with them. So I was like, in order to understand what you're really talking about, you need to blog and you need to make posts and walkthroughs so you're comfortable talking about them in interviews. I was like, if not, this is going to be that. And everybody's been here in the interview for it. And I know it. If you give me some time, I can figure it out. Everybody's been there before because it's not common knowledge to you or something you hadn't looked at a long time. Like, I've had
interviews. That happened to me before.
It happened to me plenty of times.
I had a brain fart in an interview, and they was asking me the most basic questions about SQL, and I'm like, oh, God, what? So I didn't get that one.
It's happened, though. He's like, bro, what is going on here?
Yeah.
So this next role is, so you're out of the customer success space, right? What type of role is this now? And you don't have to say for who. Yeah. I kind of just want to get the gist of it.
So, me, I bounce around, as you know. So, I have rebranded. And now I'm a finance girly, okay? So, I work in finance operations. I manage a team of business and financial analysts for a company in the finance industry, and just being able to, again, like bringing in some of those like past experiences and skill sets that I was able to leverage in the past and some of my other roles that are completely unrelated. You know, I have a specialty for pivoting into industries where I have no background and no experience in. And this is just my latest, my latest feat. But I'm really enjoying it because I'm learning a lot and I'm really integrating like my leadership skills. I'm really integrating like my management, operations management skills into the work that I'm doing every single day. And plus, I like that I'm able to help develop other people as well so they can kind of maximize their skill sets and their potentials in their roles. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I've gotten that answer before too. It's like they look at your experience. Or I remember I was interviewing for a role, and so some of the finance companies were more the banks and like investment banks. They were co-bodies, assistant vice president, vice presidents, yeah. all them type of roles. And so a person was looking at my resume from 2 years ago. It's like, why would they want to come here and they're a vice president? So, and they had to explain, it was like, it's really just a senior level role, right. but it's one of the things that they make people feel good about themselves in finance. But it's like,
because especially at these banks, everybody's an AVP, a VP, you know, which is great. But those titles don't necessarily transfer to other industries because
right.
like,
they don't know what that is.
Right, exactly. They're going to be like, oh, overqualified, you know, and it's not even really the case.
Yeah, I changed that to like senior GRC analyst, I think.
There you go.
Because people know exactly what that is versus me saying VP of, what was it, cybersecurity operations or like it definitely makes it seem like you're supposed to be reporting to people or something. So I'm like, I'm going to change that. But let's talk about this, though, because, like, you know, as much as we talk about big tech, a lot of people don't talk about how, like, regardless if you're doing, like, if you're not, like, you're not a trader or you're not, like, an investment banker, but most of the time you still get paid pretty good working in finance. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the one, like, if you're not getting equity in finance, what you do get a lot of times is a good bonus. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, you haven't been there a year yet.
But I'm still getting my bonus in January.
Like, for example, when I work for Goldman Sachs, my bonus is like guaranteed the next year. Because I started in November of 2021. It's like, it don't matter. Like, in January, you're going to get that bonus.
Yeah.
It's like that for you?
Yeah, I'm getting my bonus in January.
Is it a negotiated amount you all negotiated? Or can it be more than what you negotiated? Like,
it can be more. So I'm guaranteed a percentage. And depending on how well the company is performing, which is fantastic right now, it's going to increase. But there's a minimum guaranteed. And plus, I've really been kind of doubling up because I'm getting a referral bonus bag in December.
Yeah.
So that's about to be a great holiday season.
We need a donation over here for the referral bonus bag. Yeah. I know you have been talking about the referrals. And I don't mind it, but like sometimes people be like, you refer the wrong person. Mm-hmm. So it'd be like that. But some places, they don't be worth like the referral. Now, I was trying to refer anybody I knew to JP Morgan. Because some of them roles, they referrals are like 10K.
Yeah, that's what we're working with right now.
I'm like, listen, if I get about 10 of y'all on this thing,
right.
Shoot, I'm in there. I ain't leaving.
The referral bonuses, depending on the company or the organization, because I worked at a company before that was heavily pushing referral bonuses, but it was only like $500. So it's like, you're doing all that work and it's not really going to pay off that much in the end. But like, I know a lot of the tech companies and then a lot of the banks and the companies in the finance industries, they offer really big bonuses. Yeah. So you really got to be strategic about who you are transitioning or helping to transition into that organization because I don't get my bonuses until three months after.
They
got to
make it.
They got to make it past probation. So if you know somebody is not going to show up to work, not going to pop up to the meetings, is a slacker, don't refer them.
Yeah. And don't send them my way.
Right. Because that's going to have you looking crazy. They're going to be looking at you like, why did you bring this person? You know, so I'm doing, I and everyone that I refer that lands an interview, I meet with them personally. I prep them.
I get
to know them and their background. Like, I make sure that if you are getting an interview, you're getting their job.
That's good. We need more people like you in this world. But back on finance. Does this job pay more than the last customer success role?
Oh, yeah. Like, absolutely. I think I pivoted into the customer success side because I really wanted to, work for that company, and I really wanted to kind of see what I can do with, like, my sales background and just, like, really be able to see what it was hitting for out here in Dallas, okay? So they paid all right, but I would say finance, like outside of tech, the finance industry is probably the next level down.
And then don't let it be like a hybrid. Like the other day I was telling somebody, I just, the tweet was just healthcare and fintech. Like, that's all. And I didn't tell people on Twitter because, like, I don't like y'all like that. But people I knew that fit the description of that company that I was looking for, I sent them some. I was telling them, I was like, man, I said, one of these jobs, they was talking about on the low end, it was like, if they the right candidate could get more, they was like, they was talking about they'll pay the candidate then like $190 for base, mm-hmm. and they would give them like a 20% bonus. Yep. They probably get equity. Yep. And this is a healthcare company that handles, I think, like financial healthcare mm-hmm. transactions. And like, that's, if y'all watching this, I've been telling a lot of y'all in consultations, healthcare is what you should be paying attention to, because all these breaches that's happening in healthcare, they are trying to get better with their processes, their third parties, all the different risks, how they stay safe. All those companies, they're either companies already doing that or companies are about to get bigger to offload the burden on some of the bigger companies. And they paying a lot of money to get people over there.
And if you look at the Bureau of Labor and Statistics reports, month over month, year over year, healthcare is like constantly increasing. They're like one of the industries that is consistently increasing every single month. Like, even when we were having all these major layoffs, healthcare just kept growing. That industry mm-hmm. Is really solid, is really stable. And I know a lot of people think, when they think tech, they think they have to work for a tech company, but you could do that anywhere. Yeah. And the healthcare industry really needs some support and in that department.
I've seen jobs for hospitals paying good money. I'm like, look, if you know somebody, that's the hard part too. Like trying to get a hold of somebody mm-hmm. you may know that works for one of these hospitals. But all of them are paying. So like, one of the other things that the millennial guy was saying on Business Insiders, like his struggles was that he was only focusing on like tech and something else. He was like, look into other industries.
No, I when I'm applying, I'm like all over the place. I'm targeting specific roles, but as far as industry, I'm all across the board. I don't care about industry. I can adapt to any industry.
Like for me, the industry doesn't matter. The job type is the same.
Right, exactly.
And people are just more so going to that because of like pay. But a lot of people, once you've been in the game long enough, you got the experience. I'm not going to say sometimes based on the company may be a drastic different, mm-hmm. but most of the time it's relative.
Yeah.
Per industry and company you go to. Or there could be some other perk that you can negotiate. Like, all right, mm-hmm. well, can y'all pay 100% of my benefits? Mm-hmm. Listen, as a dad now, that's what I ask. I was like, how y'all benefits looking?
Right. Hello.
How much paternity leave we talking about here? Mm-hmm. See, at GS, them folks get half a year, mm-hmm. 6 months. And they was like, you ain't got to use it all at once.
We just bumped ours up to, I think, 5.
That's good. Mine was 3. So I let my first week back was this week.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, I didn't want to go. I kind of got used to my little flow of like everything, but it was cool.
3 is good though.
3's company.
Yeah. 3's good.
Did you ever watch that show at nighttime? Mm-hmm, it's a knock on my door. That's all the part I know of that song.
Yeah. What was it? I'm waiting for you.
Something like that. Like, that'll be a good charade / finish these lyrics type of game, like going back at all the old like shows that mm-hmm. people grandma stuff had on TV like that, or like In the Heat of the Night.
Oh my god!
That's when you know it's time to either go to bed, or you have
no supervision. you have no supervision.
I'm too late. Like nobody like used to watch that, but I want to briefly touch on. I guess I know you talk about resume badge. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about resume badge very quickly on what it is, who it's for, and I guess like your ideal client.
Yeah. So resume badge is my baby, my little company that I started back in 2019. I started working on resume badge. And as far as who I work with, I really work with people across various industries. I mostly work with people in the tech sector, but I also work with former educators like myself. I work with people in the healthcare space, people in the security space, and all across the world now, too. So I have people that I've worked with in like Pakistan and India and Nigeria, all over the United States. So really what I do is just help people kind of focus on their job search strategy, and really be able to kind of narrow down opportunities that would be a good fit for them. So yes, I do resumes, and I also support people with crafting their LinkedIn profile and being just more marketable in that digital space. I also support people with like their portfolios and things like that. But what I really like to focus on the most is like, what is your long-term job search strategy, to keep people from just getting burnt out and wasting time just applying to a million jobs at a time. So once, you know, the resume and the LinkedIn and all that, that's just scratching the surface. You know, like that's the basic requirements. Yes, you need a resume. Yes, you should probably have a LinkedIn if you're going to be looking for a job. But like what you do with that is what matters the most. So like, let's get you ready for those interviews. Let's narrow down the companies that you're going to be targeting. Let's narrow down what you're going to be bringing to the table as far as those interviews. What are your top skills that you're going to be focusing on, and how are you going to communicate those skills to people so they can see how you, they can leverage you within their organization, within their company or whatever. And then I also support people with like negotiating once they get to that side, and being able to really advocate for themselves, because like we talked about earlier, it's not really that many people that are going to be advocating for you. You know, until you get in the door and get to know people and build relationships from the inside, until then, you're advocating for yourself. So I help with all of that.
Perfect, perfect. Man, you know what? I have one bad experience with a guy who got a resume done for me. He was like in Saudi Arabia, Dubai, or something like that. And it was a bad experience. And his resume looked way better after I did it. I had to find it. But the dude tried to start slandering me. Like, he went on my LinkedIn learning course and just started saying some stuff, and he got mad and the thing. I'm like, bro, this is way better than what you had. I don't know what else you're looking for. And I just ignored him. But it was funny to me.
Because people
I was
will like, do all that, and then they'll go and get a job, the job that they want after doing all that.
But not only that, I just did that because I was like, I'm not familiar with the customs in these other places. Yeah, I'm only going to stick to like U.S. because I don't have time for it.
Yeah. That's a lot.
I'm like, y'all got it. I'm not
slandering you on your course is nuts. Like, why are we doing that?
Bro, I was just like, you got it, fam. I was like, because I don't know. I guess they just come through anywhere, and maybe it was a good price for him.
Yeah.
But I was like, I think I showed him, like, well, you do see this disclaimer down here that says, hey, I don't have to get refunds, this and that, but I will work with you in the way I can.
Right.
But that's me too. I think I put on my Twitter, LinkedIn, like my ideal client is a person possibly that already has some type of tech experience. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit easier for us to make that transition to almost double like their salary or something like that. I was like, I can do it from scratch too. It just takes us a little longer.
Yeah.
Because I got a guy, we got him like two offers within... It happened pretty quick for him, actually. And the benefit was that one of them happened, and I think they just liked him, and he got it because he really didn't do good on the interview. Mm. Like, the stuff he was doing, stuff I had already told him against about his resume. So I was like, bro, you ain't answering these questions right, bro. Right. They asked you this, and you said this. He's like, damn, I did say that. But in the other interview, he got mostly because, one, he did good. He knocked out of the park. But, two, he was able to get seen fast. Well, really, that their interview, recruiter, you know how they schedule, and they she almost blew it. But one of my friends that works for the company, she referred him too, so he was a referral.
Okay.
And that part helped too. And the fact I was like, hey, you know, he finna be off the board. They taking too long. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on? He said, let me tell the manager. Every time we had to go and tell her, he would get an email right then. And so the manager doesn't even like that recruiter because they keep on botching it with the talent.
Oh. Yeah.
And I'm like, man, but that's another thing too, guys, of like just working with people who have a network of like good friends and industry. Mm-hmm. Now you get tapped in and say, hey, I know like they're looking for these like things. What type of clients you got? Mm-hmm. You just never know. So like sometimes whatever their price is, that investment is well worth it.
Yeah. Because then they could plug you in an X, Y, and Z person. And I do that too. Like if I have a client that I'm working with, I see they're a good fit for a company that I know somebody at, I'll go And look at the company, see what opportunities they have over there, and then now you have a referral. Yeah. You know,
that's what I do too. Because you know, most people, if you got a good name, they'll trust you refer. Like I'm not trying to send nobody to anybody if I feel like they not ready or they on some BS. You know what I'm saying? And I'll act straight up. Like I know, like one of my friends, I asked her because she referred one of my friends. Well, granted, she didn't know him, so I could get it. But I was like, hopefully, I don't know if she ever talked to him at the time to figure out if she wanted to refer him or not. But I think he ended up, I got to ask him, he was interviewing with Apple or something at the time too. So I was like, you know, I ain't going to see no BS type person. Like, if I reach out to you, it's like, this is a dude that just came from Amazon.
It's a viable candidate.
And burnt out. Yeah. So that's like, hey, can you refer him? Like, hey, you know, easy money for you. Right. This ain't no chump change type of dude. But let's talk about like funny stuff. She's another person that is on Black Tech Twitter, and we always just talk about how much of a fun/dangerous space it is. Like, you know what, though? Surprisingly, over the last couple of months, it's been very quiet.
It's been too quiet.
We hadn't seen any new gurus pop out. We ain't seen no new boot camps. I think it's been
leveling off a bit, I would say.
I think it was just the 2020s, the grift that you could do.
Oh, my God.
Because it was so easy for people to get in. Like, and any other time, nobody was getting into tech that fast.
Yeah, because where are those people now? Who are you getting jobs now? Where are they? Who are you getting hired now?
Exactly.
But then you want to have a $3,000 resume service. Like, get out of here.
Listen, I ain't mad. Listen, if you get a person a job, I ain't mad at the
price.
If you get
the person a job, cool. But people are doing that and there are no results to support those prices. And that's where I get angry. That's where it's like a problem. Because now it's just a grift.
Grift. For sure. I'd be mad too. But then sometimes I was feeling like some people shouldn't be in tech if they falling for some of them things. Like people giving them type of guarantees. Like I had this post and I'm going to show you something. It's going to be fun to you. I said, anybody that's a guru that is saying you can get into, like in my case, I saw somebody, they talk about you can get into cybersecurity or something in X amount of time in like 90 days. And they flyer, they got on a blazer with the jeans. It's a red flag.
Yeah. No.
And people was like, what you mean? We can't wear blazers and jeans no more? I was like,
the tech guru starter pack.
I was like, y'all missing the point. Because I meant to put this on my story, and I'm going to put it up there one day. But look, this is exactly what I was talking about.
Oh, God.
That's the starter pack right there.
Ooh, child. Industry expert.
And he was on
90 days or less.
He was on one of them other tech podcasts, and he told the host he went from being an Uber driver to doing penetration testing. And he did not ask that man, hey, all right, so what you did when you was a penetration tester? And like, how'd that happen? That's when I was done. I was like, yeah, this nigga full of shit.
Anybody could say anything on the internet. It's up to you to do your due diligence and verify.
And then the comments were nothing but Africans. That's how I knew the shit was fake, bro. I was like, man, you got to be kidding me. That same person, he reached out to come on my show, but I got too much integrity to let him sit over here and lie. Or if he was... The episode probably going to come out.
You would have cooked him. You should have brought him on.
But you know what?
Just to cook him.
I don't want to cook people. Like, it's another person that's in the area I've been wanting to sit down with. And I think twofold. I know the guy knows who he's talking about. I think he gets a bad rap because he's a good marketing genius. And people get mad at it.
I think I know who you're talking about.
But I'm like, if he would ever agree to come on, we would talk beforehand and say, hey, this ain't going to be why you said this and that. It's actually going to be out your story. I'll give you some pushback, but it's going to be educated pushback. Yeah. It's not going to be, I can't even kick your back in type stuff.
Right.
And I just think that's one of the reasons why he don't want to come. He might just think that's what I'm on, but I'm really not. Now, of course.
Some people need it, though.
Of course, they probably feel like that because I have made comments like, hey, if somebody's saying, like I just showed you 90 days and you're finna get 120K, you got no experience, but you going up against people with 7 age experience, you kind of do the math. I was just letting people know, hey.
Especially right now, because it's like the last 2 years with these mass layoffs, like everybody's in a job market. So if you think you're just going to come in off the streets, no experience, and you're competing with all these super experienced people that are certified, that like have gotten their hands dirty, and you're going to get that same pay, that same opportunity, you gotta manage your expectations.
And that's why those people need to work on the other parts of the job versus just trying to apply.
Yeah.
And that's how they'll have find a little bit more success in all this. But, I mean, it's fine. Like, even the last episode, we talked about this guy. He had this post instead of he got his own LinkedIn banner from desperate to dying. Like,
it's kind of what is stupid. Going on?
It's kind of stupid to me because I don't advise against the. I would tell people all the time, I don't advise the banner because the recruiters can see if you open the work or not with it or without it on.
Yeah, correct.
That's why I don't think it doesn't matter if you have it on or not. Like, it's a lot, man. Like, people be doing like a whole bunch of funny stuff on LinkedIn. And I mean, it's good for reactions, but it's not getting you the reaction you need, as in, hey, you just got this job offer.
Right.
Like, if that's the case, like, that's what, listen, the day LinkedIn starts saying, hey, we paying y'all for y'all posts, like, y'all can see me go crazy.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Listen, because Twitter paying, that's why people be going crazy on Twitter.
Yeah, people just be doing
And on Threads, people do the same thing on Threads.
Threads is paying now? Let me get back on there. Man, you lying.
I promise Threads do a Threads bonus. You got a whatever status you got to go to, but every other day, somebody on Threads talks about something. Man, Dallas is cool, but the food isn't good. I see that same post like every other day. I was like, bro, y'all gotta stop. Like,
you can find good food anywhere you go.
Exactly. And stop trying to do these same posts that you see people do all the time. I was like, it's getting old. Like, be original. It's literally copy and paste, bar for bar.
That's a dying art.
It definitely is. I mean, you know, what do you have to say to like to your haters and your enemies from any enemies on Twitter?
I have a lot of people blocked.
Why you blocked them?
Because once I start with somebody, I'm not going to stop. So if I don't like you, I prefer to just block you. Unless you come for me and you wasn't blocked, we didn't have no problems. But I like to mitigate.
Have you ever found a friend from that? Like, let's say friends is like, y'all's going back and forth. Be like, no way, I kind of like them. And then, like, had that ever spurred something? He's like, nah, bump it. Because I can respect certain people.
I have one or two experiences where that's happened. And then, like, people will come into my DMs like, dang, you really went crazy on me. And then, like, we'll be cool.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be all type of stuff. Like, people just type their hands and say stuff. And I'm like.
Yeah, a lot of people have Twitter fingers. And then they feel like they can say things to people. And, like, you're just supposed to, you know, take it. But me, I clap back. You know, I don't go looking for beef, but I'll let it in the door. You know, I'm going to finish it. So I try to not engage in foolishness on Twitter anymore because me personally, it's kind of fun to me. I'll take it too far. I hurt your feelings. Like, so I try to stay away from that.
I just got a rule to not going back and forth with y'all because I'll never win. And it's not that I can't win. It's just I won't win. Like, everything I would be saying would be logical. Mm-hmm. And what you probably would be saying, not necessarily you, I'm talking about women in general, wouldn't be. And I would lose. And I was like, it's a losing cause. Because I learned my lesson. I arguing, not really arguing, but debating topics that I was actually kind of a little passionate about.
Yeah.
With people that I knew. And that when they weren't really looking at what I was saying, they just were feeling... They were personally attached to the situations. Yeah. I was like, this is a lost cause. I can't do this with them because they feel a way about this because this connects with them personally.
Right.
And it doesn't really connect with me personally. I'm just talking about the facts that are here.
Yeah. Like, I've had experiences where, like, I've worked with people before or done collaborations with people on apps, you know, like Twitter and then like
Clubhouse.
And the next thing I know, they got a problem with me. Next thing I know, you know, they're making something up about me. So I always address those because I don't let people defame my character. And I'll start digging stuff up on you and then I'm put it all on there, you know. So people don't like to go back and forth with me for that reason because I will take it too far.
Yeah, for me, I let you get your shine on, but then on the pod, I'm putting it on wax.
Yes.
And I know you're going to see it. So that's how I get down. I'm like, I treat this like rap. I was like, bet. I was like, cut this part out and send it to your friends so they can see it.
Yeah, as far as like that, it's only two people on the internet that I really have like any real, you know, smoke with.
They cause you to lose money or something, or is
just... No, it goes back to attempt at defaming my character. And what I later found out was because they were grifters and they were trying to cover up whatever they had going on so that they wouldn't be suspected. So it was like, you know, people will project whatever they have going on onto you so that people aren't looking over at them.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
But me, I'm an open book, baby. You can look me up, find whatever you
need. I know. And speaking of that, I was going to ask, where can the followers and the listeners, where can they keep up with you at?
I am on YouTube. So, my page on YouTube is Resume Badge. So you can get some, you can follow me there. I had taken a little hiatus while I was getting my life together, you know, while I was job searching so I could focus on that. But definitely check out my channel. I'm also on Twitter or X. So Worldwide Jess on there with a zero, W0, Worldwide Jess. And I'm Resume Badge on there as well. I have a community on Twitter for exclusively for job seekers. It's called Career Fireside. So if you're looking for new opportunity, you're looking for, you know, see what jobs are out there, the latest market statistics on how many jobs are being added, you know, what industries are thriving right now, information like that, you can go on the Career Fireside page and find that. We get our pretty strong community, about 13,000 people now, and there's recruiters and hiring managers on there as well that are always looking for people. And I'm on LinkedIn. Oh yeah, I have a website, resumebadge.com.
Hey, I forgot. Hey, there y'all go, guys. There y'all go. And like I said, like a lot of my guests I bring on, a lot of times it's like, you know what, you may come do something live. Or like I say, you have you and T in the other studio over there. And we do some live and do some fun stuff just to tap back in with everybody. But it's been another episode of the Texture Talk, guys. I appreciate y'all for rocking with us. Y'all know, do leave comments, like, share it out. Also, use the voicemail feature on the TextualTalk.com website. So next time when we get to the end of the episode, we can listen to your voicemail, answer it, and you'll get a reply.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
But until next time, like I always say, let's stay textual, and we out. Peace. Bye.